Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. I'd like to welcome my partners, Matt Lockhart and Ryan Barnett, to today's podcast. We have an interesting topic for you. We're going to talk about non-disclosure agreements, NDAs. So over to our host and moderator, Ryan, to run the show. Over to you, Ryan.
Hey, great. Hey, Mike. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us here today. When we talk about topics for the week, we look at things that are hot on our radar. And one of them is a bit of an intricacy, but it's important in a transaction, is it a non-disclosure agreement. So in talking through what NDAs mean to people and companies and why they're important. I want to start this out by stating, hey, we're not lawyers. We are not legal counsel. But we end up dealing with NDAs on nearly every company that we talk to that goes to substantial talk. So, Mike, I'll just start out with the softball question. You know, what is an NDA?
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, an NDA is essentially a non-disclosure agreement between parties that are looking to have a substantive conversation about a potential business transaction. And in our world, it mostly has to do with mergers and acquisitions, but certainly NDAs can be used for a variety of different types of conversations that are sensitive. And, you know, the concept is that something that someone might learn pursuant or as part of that conversation shouldn't be used in a competitive scenario by the other party or be disclosed in the wild, if you will, or disclosed to the public. The nature of those conversations, the items that are disclosed, you know, maybe things like customer lists, if they're disclosed, or employees or financials, should remain confidential.
Okay, so essentially the basic, if there's protected type information, this gives the right or ability for two companies to discuss that information and keep it private. Is that kind of the general sense about what it would you say an NDA is?
Yep, that's a general gist. That's what I call the overarching intent. Oftentimes it morphs into other things, which we'll explore in this call, but that is the overall intent, and that's why they were even, you know, conceived and put into practice.
Okay, great. And Matt, just one of the general questions is, if we're thinking in the M&A front, why is it important for these NDAs to be in place? What are sellers looking for? What are buyers looking for? And why they insist on having an NDA in the first place?
Well, sure, Ryan. I mean, you know, obviously there's a whole bunch of proprietary information that is being shared between parties, right? Including financial information, could be some trade secrets, could be the special sauce that a firm has, and you know, critical for that non-publicly disclosable information to be kept confidential. But even before that, when you're thinking either as a buyer or a seller about entering into the process of merger and acquisition, well, that's, you know, that's important information. That's competitive information is important that is not disclosed until the appropriate time. And, you know, think about it. If you're in the shoes of a seller and, you know, a firm is considering, selling the business, well, you know, important that, you know, customers don't know until the appropriate time. Important that employees don't know until the appropriate time. And so, you know, it's providing comfort to the parties that their secrets as well as their intentions and strategy aren't disclosed to the public.
Okay, makes a ton of sense. Thanks, Matt. And this, I think, Mike, you might be best to answer this is, can you tell us a little bit about the types of NDAs? And what I'm thinking here is, as an advisor, we may sign an NDA different. And I guess I'm curious on what's a mutual NDA? Where's a third party need to be involved in an NDA? kind of who signs an NDA? Is it a customer? Is it the advisor? Is it someone else? And who does the NDA cover? Does, for example, does a NDA cover, if you sign it with a company, does it cover advisors and such with it?
Yeah, for sure. So most of the time, a mutual NDA is one that's signed by two parties. Well, typically in our world, they're the parties that are pursuant to a conversation about a potential M&A transaction. And there's language in the NDA that covers their advisors. When I say their advisors, their respective advisors could be, you know, folks like us as an M&A advisor, could be a banker or a lawyer or someone who's advising them around the nuance of the transaction. And I would say most NDAs are structured that way. Now, we approach it a little differently and hold ourselves to a little higher standard in that many of the NDAs that we sign, most probably, we are also a party to that non-disclosure. And there's specific reasons for that, legal reasons for that, in that it holds us as an intermediary and an advisor to a much higher standard of disclosure than it does if we're simply referenced as an advisor in the NDA. And, you know, there's, of course, opinions pro and con on this approach, but it's typically how we've done it, just ourselves. We know that there's differing opinions as well based on advisors and their own positioning and, you know, and what sort of legal restrictions they're held to. But we've always wanted to, you know, as Revenue Rocket, communicate to the market that we're held as to highest standard of disclosure as the parties that are in the agreement that are discussing an M&A combination, and that we will not disclose to anyone outside of that conversation anything we learn about someone's interests, motivations, desires, financials, or otherwise, so that there's more comfort, particularly based on a seller getting into the wild or getting into the market, or disclosing that they might be in the market. So hopefully that adds some clarity, Ryan, to the different kinds of, you know, who, what parties are covered, how they're covered, and, you know, how people may be mentioned or not mentioned in an NDA.
Absolutely. And it's just, it's so core to what we do. We almost forget the importance of it some days. And also it's something that I think has a fair amount of flexibility in what's done. I think if we look at what a core of an NDA does is that it helps us protect the information that we want to protect. As a seller or buyer in this process, I believe that even with an NDA in place, you still want to keep information private until the appropriate time. And so some very specific examples on that are customer lists, customer names. You don't need to disclose to a potential competitor or buyer who your customers are until there's due diligence. We can talk around them, can talk about them, but listing the customers themselves is something that with or without an NDA, you should probably keep away from. The same goes with employee names. So we typically say, hey, anything before in a letter of intent and substantial due diligence, you should cover your employees and your customers with or without an NDA. Which brings me to something we've seen lately that's been of a relative interest, which is we've had a few companies that have essentially bypassed and skipped the NDA process completely, pursuant to an introduction meeting between two firms, essentially just to say hello. I'd love to hear, Matt, maybe your thoughts on that, and if that's something that the company should consider or steer away from.
Well, you know, I think it's okay. You know, it's always good to meet people, you know, And there's an opportunity to sort of build some trust and build some relation. Mike used the term comfort, right, in terms of being comfortable with sharing information. And Ryan, your point is spot on. Just because there's an NDA in place, that doesn't mean that you should be completely open kimono, you know, timing these things. And, you know, that's our role to guide customers accordingly. But if a firm is like, well, let's just meet people. Well, that's what you'll get. you'll get meeting people. You know, there can be discussions about the publicly available information, you know, website, you know, and all the, you know, the things that you would learn publicly. But clearly, to get into what is the core, the nuts and bolts of the intentions of both firms, then it just makes sense. It just makes sense to get an NDA in place so that people are comfortable. Right. I mean, in my past days is in working with customers, we would say, look, you know, we're more than happy to have an NDA in place just so you feel comfortable. Right now. The reality is, especially for us as advisors, is that it's really critical that we're building trust, right? And building a super high degree of trust. So, we're not going to disclose the wrong information disclose information, the right information at the right, at the wrong time, regardless of whether or not there's an NDA in place. Because, you know, there's nothing more important as an advisor than having the trust of our clients as well as the trust of our prospects. I mean, if our name is muddied, well, then, you know, we're no good, right? And so, yes, it's okay to have an initial discussion without an NDA, but we need to be super clear. To progress an opportunity, an NDA is critical.
Yeah, I think it's really well said, Matt. And turning the topic a little bit, Mike, what do you think when targets, and especially perhaps target lawyers, start marking up an NDA? Is that an indication of anything else in the deal flow?
Well, it's a great question, Ryan. I think, you know, we've gotten into a spot in some cases where people overthink the non-disclosure, and they want to negotiate and nitpick terms that frankly just don't matter. Things like non-solicitation, lockout timing, is a good one of those, whether it's a year or 2 years or 20 years, you know, getting so wrapped around the axle on the timing for which someone could solicit employees, is sometimes, you know, a situation that can put getting an NDA in place at all at risk. And we think some of these points, we sort of see some of these points over and over about, you know, solicitation, disclosure, timing, time windows and lockout windows. Oftentimes, particularly if legal's involved on either side, become a real crazy sort of exercise where, you know, you might have 4, 5, 6 turns on an NDA. It does send a message to a seller or the other party that you're difficult to deal with if you're driving those changes. And I've seen more situations lately where people just will refuse to change the NDA. Or refuse to go more than one round of changes on the NDA and take away from that the perception that the other party is too difficult to deal with. And if they're too difficult to deal with in an NDA negotiation, they will be far too difficult to deal with in a transaction or M&A negotiation, and they're going to cut their losses and not talk to that person. So I think you have to be somewhat careful with the amount of changes and requests that you may want in an NDA to try to perfect it, right? It's likely not going to be perfect. And you always control the information that you disclose when you disclose it. And frankly, how fortified the NDA is at any particular stage in the process. So, you know, we mentioned earlier that, you know, some firms are going the route of no NDA for an initial meeting, or maybe the language isn't perfect, but they sign it anyway and have an initial meeting or early meetings. And then they come back around if those conversations get more serious and they need to begin disclosing more information and sort of rewrite the NDA so it's more appropriate. And certainly at that point, you have more trust. You've established more of a relationship with the other party. And you're in a position to, you know, frankly, get more restrictions into the NDA. But to try to bake all that in before you know each other is probably a big mistake, in my opinion. And we've seen many situations where, you know, if the other party wants to turn in that NDA negotiation into a big science project, you know, the folks that are in the middle of that will just throw their hands up and say, we're not going to talk to them because it's too hard to get the NDA negotiated.
Yeah, it's very interesting. One of the situations, things that we have seen is that people trying to use NDAs in initial conversations to prohibit a competitor from doing business. And that's an interesting one. We're dealing with one right now in which a target won't sign an NDA because they're worried that they're precluding themselves from doing business in which a company may be in that same market. And Matt or Mike, you feel free to jump in on this one, but it is NDAs don't seem like a great tool to stop business, and they're not really written to do so. And I'm curious, is there any advice that you could give to people when, for example, this is the exact one we heard, hey, I don't want to sign this NDA because I feel I'm not going to be able to do business in this territory if I do so. I mean, how valid is that concern?
Not. You know, it's just, you know, I think it's important, right? I mean, so in any, you know, M&A transaction, right, what are the key legal documents, right? You know, there's an NDA. That's the easiest, right? There's a letter of intent, right? You know, there's a definitive agreement. There's employment contracts. And each of these, you know, pieces have specific reasons. But the reason, right, like going back to just the core principle of an NDA is just the sharing of information. It is not intended to change or restrict ongoing business practices, right? To limit, you know, how you would conduct business, right? Other than specific, if there's a specific trade secret or patent secret or something along those lines that it's just protected. So, you know, people do oftentimes say overthink it, you know, like Mike said, and those would be scenarios of overthinking. And, you know, important to, you know, when you're entering into a discussion, to be eyes wide open that you're entering into a discussion. Right. And it's just that you are you're starting the path of building a relationship and building trust. And if you're so wary, I should say, about that, then, you know, maybe it's not the right time to start a discussion.
Yeah, exactly. And the last topic here, and not to get too in the woods, but what's the importance of data sharing tools in this process? So, for example, data rooms that are out there, and how should data and what level should be shared in particular services? I mean, why is a data room important once an NDA is in place?
Well, I'm happy to jump in on this one. A data room is critical for a lot of reasons. First of all, if there is a violation of a non-disclosure agreement, the party that's been harmed has to show very definitively what information was disclosed and by whom and that it actually harmed the business. And that cannot be done very effectively if you're just emailing documents around willy-nilly, right? So the reason that data rooms are typically used is one, certainly there's just one version of the truth, so makes it easy for everyone to look kind of at the one version. You don't have what I call versionitis, where there's 15 versions floating around and no one has any clue as to whether or not they have the current version or not, because there's just one version of the truth. But much more importantly, there's log data as to who's looked at the data, when they looked at it, when they downloaded it, when they checked it out, when they checked it in, so that in the wildly unlikely event, and I'll just add that we haven't seen any situations where people have used data inappropriately or quote unquote blatantly violated an NDA, at least in our history over the last 20 plus years. But in the event that that should occur, you know, the harmed party has to show that, you know, there was a disclosure by someone, or likely that it was disclosed by someone. Certainly after that data, let's say if it was downloaded, you can't control what happens with the data if someone downloads it or takes it and, you know, is a bad actor, right? That's pretty tough. But at least you can know where the data, who the data was disclosed to, so you can narrow down any investigation to who would have had access to the data. And ultimately, you know, be able to protect yourself pursuant to the terms of the NDA. So, you know, I guess to, you know, summarize it, it's one to provide sort of one version of the data, but also more importantly to know who's looked at the data and to protect yourself pursuant to your non-disclosure.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, Mike, I think we've covered NDAs about to death. Just to wrap it up, they're critical to share information and trust. When we look through this, it's something that becomes, everyone has their own version. And one of the things that I've even seen is companies signing two versions of NDAs, one, you know, for each company to help smooth out the process. I think just as critical as the document is the understanding that all parties have that they're sharing critical information, and it's a step towards moving towards a business relationship. So, for example, when we kick off an introduction call, but we note that everyone's under a call pursuant to a potential transaction. So what's on the call, you know, keep on the call, but please feel free to share information that's going to make all parties aligned. So critical, it helps us protect each other. But you still have to use that common business sense to keep the most confidential information, your secret sauce, your customers, your employees, to yourself until it's the appropriate time to disclose. So with that, Matt, Mike, I'll thank you for this cover that. And Mike, I'll turn it over to you to wrap it up.
Thanks, Ryan. And we look forward to having you join us next week. Thanks again and take care.